Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Hi, I'm Scott Hahn, and I'd like to invite you personally to join me and Breadbox Media on August 24th in New Oxford, Pennsylvania, for a day of spiritual renewal. I'll be presenting three talks, one on St. Joseph, one on the sacrament of matrimony, and another one on the Holy Eucharist. Learn more and register at breadboxmedia.com/PA conference. I hope to see you there.
Celebrate our God-given freedom and faith while honoring our Blessed Mother with Ghirelli's USA Rosary. Each state is represented on this rosary's 50 beads. Red, white, and blue enamel adorn its patriotic crucifix. Get yours today. Shop www.ghirelli.com.
And welcome to our podcast. This is Manage Your Money God's Way. We are from Compass Catholic Ministries, where we will show you how to remove any and all the debt that you've accumulated, no matter how small, no matter how large the debt may be. My name is Steve Holbrook, and in our ministry, we use biblical principles to show you how God intends for all of us to be handling money. And we'll teach you these principles in our 9-week small group Bible study called Navigating Your Finances God's Way. You can learn more about the Bible study by going to compasscatholic.org, click on Books and Studies. John and Evelyn Bean, who are the co-founders of Compass Catholic, join me today. And for many of you, your child is somewhere between high school and the next step in life, either college, trade school, or a job. And if you haven't done an adequate enough job teaching them about money, how to manage it, how to save it, spend it, give it, you may want to discuss with them some of the ideas that we're about to discuss with you. It's going to help prevent some serious mistakes as they head off to that next season of life.
One of the things we hear about most often from people who take the navigating class is, boy, I really wish I'd learned this earlier. You know, it's just so crazy that as a society, we don't teach financial basics in high school.
You know, I think some of the schools are starting to do that, but I don't think it's a requirement everywhere in the core curriculum, and it really should be.
Well, every single person needs to be fully understanding their money situation and how they're going to, you know, how they're going to have a fruitful life. And if you're going to struggle with money, you're going to struggle in life.
So do you think every high school graduate, whether they're graduating or getting a GED, ought to have to pass some kind of a financial literacy test?
Absolutely. What do you think, Steve? You agree with that?
I agree 100%. It's amazing, as simple as writing a check, how foreign it is for some individuals.
Oh, especially now when there's all the debit cards and that kind of thing.
The They're kids just don't so understand. Used to using an app to do the work for them and transferring money or just swiping a card. But writing a check has become, or how to balance a checkbook has become foreign.
And unfortunately, that holds for a lot of adults, too.
Good point.
So if you're wondering what to teach your kids about money, here's some ideas. And the first one is God owns everything.
You know, this is basic religion, which unfortunately today is in short supply. God created all things, and He alone is the owner of everything. And our role is to be a good steward of the blessings that He's given to us. You know, once kids can understand this, Evelyn, the rest of the lessons fall into place. The problem is that most adults don't understand it, or even live by it if they do understand that God owns everything.
And that's a hard concept to get your mind around, but once you get that in your mind, everything else just comes together, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
All right, how about this one? If you don't have the money, you can't buy it. There's a thought, huh?
I've got credit cards.
Do you remember that Steve Martin skit they did on Saturday Night Live? He's selling his book, If You Don't Have the Money, You Can't Buy It. And the couple he's talking to says, well, how do I buy something if I don't have the money? And he says, you save it. And they go, save? Where am I going to get the saved money? So that seems that premise of don't buy it unless you have the money seems to go against everything in our society, but it's just simple math.
Yeah, simple math should solve that issue easily. If you don't have it, you don't do it. But our society encourages people to go into debt to get what they want. And most of the time, and I think I said that right, society encourages them to go into debt to get what they want. I didn't say what they need.
Well, too many times that people use the term want instead of need. I need a new pair of shoes.
Yeah.
I need a new dress. I need a new set of golf clubs.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's really a want, not a need.
And that's why I was emphasizing the point.
Needs are anything that's basically necessary to sustain life. Food, clothing, and shelter, right? And then wants are everything else. Like, what are the wants, John?
New golf clubs.
But how many times do you hear somebody saying, oh, I need to get that new smartphone as soon as it comes out because it hit the market, so I need it. And you don't really need it if your old one is working perfectly well. So what's the next thing that kids need to know when they're getting out on their own, John?
Well, I think that they've got to understand what the cost of debt is. Too many people get into trouble because they don't understand what those easy monthly payments really mean over many, many years. You know, they don't understand that money is being wasted paying interest on the credit cards just to allow them to have a small monthly payment. You know, that interest extends those monthly payments out for years.
Forever.
Yeah. So, you know, you got to get away from that. You got to understand what the total cost is. And that's something that as a parent, you can teach your child very easily with that first bicycle, that first motorcycle, that first beat up car, if they're going to finance it. And they say, well, but Dad, the cost of the car is only $2,000. And do you have $2,000? Oh, no, I can pay for it, you know, $150 a month. For how long? Well, 60 or 70 months. And so how much is that? You know, and, you know, they're totally blown away by the total cost if they really sit down and calculate it.
Well, don't all the credit cards have to show the total cost now if you make the minimum payment and the number of years it takes?
I think credit cards do. I'm not sure about car loans.
Yeah, maybe not. I don't know. Since we don't have one, we don't know, right? How about the lesson that says your financial success is not about how much money you make, it's about how well you manage what you do make?
Or a different way of saying it is your financial success depends on how little you spend.
And your discipline in doing that.
Yes.
We met an interesting couple that are actually trying to figure out how little they can spend.
Yes. Yeah, they've had a budget for a couple of years it was a gracious plenty, and they said, well, you know, let's see how little we can live on.
Oh, so this is, it has nothing to do with what they have to do.
No.
This is something they want to experiment with.
I think the wake-up call was they were living free and easy, like most young married couples with two incomes, and then the baby started coming. And I think sitting there holding that baby in his lap one day, the father looked down and said, "Rot-row, I got college, I got weddings, I got kids coming up." So
they had three babies in about 4 years.
Okay,
and mom decided she wasn't going to work, and so now they're down to one income. They got three extra mouths to feed and diapers to buy and all that kind of stuff, and they'd had a budget. But they decided to, well, now that we know what we can get, we know what we can spend, you know, the way we like it, how little can we spend and still like it?
So they went in and made cuts.
Huge cuts. Yeah.
Huge. Well,
yeah, they're basically living on a crisis budget. And they
I was just going to ask you, are they practicing the crisis? Okay.
Yeah, their goal is to save and be able in their early 40s. To do what they want to do with their lives.
Okay, so once the kids are grown.
So once the kids are grown and gone, they can have the lifestyle they want,
well,
which
even
may
before
include...
then, because the kids, when they're in their 40s, those kids aren't going to be grown.
Well, that's true. They're still pretty old. Yeah.
They might get to be 10, you know.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So that's a conscious...
So that's nice.
Yeah, it's a conscious lifestyle decision that they made. But so many people just kind of bounce through life not making any conscious lifestyle decisions.
Now, were the decisions tough for them on where to cut? Because again, we have talked to couples about the crisis budget and have taken them through the process on looking for things to cut in. We've made recommendations. How about for them? I mean, was it?
It didn't seem like it. It seemed like they were both on the same mindset, and that makes it a lot easier when you're both striving for the same goal. And they both had the mindset that they wanted to see how little they could live on. So the compromises, I think, were much easier for them than they may be for a couple where one's a spender and one's a saver.
Mm-hmm. Both of them are probably would be categorized as savers.
But, you know, if you start out teaching your child about how well they can manage money, then that's a very good lesson that will last them for the rest of their lives. They can just carry it over into their teen years, their young adult years, their marriage. It's just a good basic principle for them to learn early on so that they can continue that as they get older.
Well, you kind of had an example of some little bit of education this weekend. We went to the graduation party for our number one grandson, high school graduation. And he's going off to higher learning in the summer. And Evelyn was talking to him about his car insurance.
Yeah, it made my heart warm and fuzzy. He said that he's got two insurance payments. His insurance premiums for his car insurance are due twice a year. And he's got two in the bank. So when he spends the first one, he's going to start saving for the third one and always have like one in the can that he doesn't have to save for and while he's saving for the third one. So it's almost like an emergency fund for his car insurance payment.
That's nice that he's thinking forward.
It was really nice. Yeah. And he's done some other things like using an app to save and using that Roundup thing mm-hmm. and having a certain amount of money taken out and put into a savings account. So the kid's on his way. I know. We were proud of him.
Evelyn, you have every right to be proud of that young man. This is Manage Your Money God's Way, presented by Compass Catholic Ministries, helping you get completely out of debt just by following the principles that God laid out for us in the Bible. Yes, the Bible. In the Bible, you will find 2,500 verses showing us how we are to handle money and possessions. Let us teach you these biblical principles. Simply go to compasscatholic.org for more information on our Bible study, Navigating Your Finances God's Way. And today we are discussing a number of items that you can pass along to your children, advice on handling money. And John, one of the pieces of advice that I've heard you and Evelyn discuss over and over is handling your income well. Would you explain that?
Well, your income, it pays the bills. Pays your debt, it funds your lifestyle, it provides for your future. But if you don't have enough income, then you've got to get a second income, right?
Yes.
What should we be doing in order to be able to stretch that money out better?
Not get into debt, not take on too many obligations, put your needs before your wants. You know, I think where people a lot of times get into trouble is they fulfill their wants and then they don't have money for their needs. I know we were talking to a couple over the weekend, and they were talking about their son who moved to a different state. And the son called them and said, "Mom, I have a dog, and I had to take the dog to the vet, and I spent $600. Now I don't have enough money to buy food." So she sent him money to buy food for the family.
I missed that story, but I can imagine who it is.
Glad you missed that story, because I can imagine what you would have said.
Yeah, I think I would have said, the dog needs to go, and you need to figure out how you're going to feed you and your wife before you start spending money on a dog. So, you know, it all depends on your priorities. But a lot of times people will do that. They'll put money someplace that's not a necessity and then not have money for the necessities.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of times if people's income increases, then they just expand their wants and needs.
So lifestyle inflation, right?
Exactly. Absolutely. I mean, we were guilty of that.
Oh, we were guilty of that big time.
You know, every time we got $50 more a week or a couple hundred dollars a month or whatever it was,
there was something else to buy.
The desire to save it lasted not any longer than it took to get to the store.
So how do you educate someone that with that extra money, a bonus or a slight raise in their pay, it's not a license to go out and blow it?
The key thing that if people would adopt this attitude, it would solve all those problems. And that is, this point in your life, establish what your standard of living is. How much money you're going to live on. Then everything that comes in above that. You get a raise, you know, you get a Christmas gift or you get a bonus or whatnot. It all goes into savings. It does not affect your standard of living because you've already set the course for what your standard of living is.
Unless there comes a time when your stand, when your lifestyle changes, like if you get married or if you have a baby or something like that, then you readjust your standard of living and change that up.
Yeah, those I forget what the insurance company calls them, but they're life
milestones.
Along that line. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. You know, when you have a life milestone, yeah, that you can change then, but the rest of the time you should, you know, stay the course.
And I really believe that every individual really wants to save and have money, but they think the little that they put away is not going to make a big difference. But if you do it consistently, it almost gets to be fun because you get to watch it grow.
I think most people don't understand the little leaks in their budget. You know, we talk about the fancy coffee on the way to work, $5 a day, $25 a week. What's that add up to?
A lot of money.
It's like $1,300 a year if you do it every week.
Yeah.
But they don't look at the $1,300 in aggregate. They look at the $5 a day, and $5 a day isn't much, and it's not. It's that $5 a day spent instead of saved over time that's a lot.
With the graduation of our grandson, I was just kind of thinking about things, and so when he completes his education, he'll be 21 years old, and if he has $5,000 to put in the bank, maybe his grandparents can go together and you know, create a pot of $5,000, put it in a Roth or an IRA of some sort, and he just lets it sit. No additions until he's 65.
At age 21?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a lot of money. Well, that's up to a lot of money over time.
I mean,
that's
somebody listening, it doesn't sound like a lot of money, and 21 to 65 seems like, you know, into the future, I'll never get there.
It comes faster than you think.
It grows to a little over $100,000.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And that's at 7%, which is a reasonable return. If he's able to put $100 or $200 a month, every single month, for that 45 years into that account, then the number's astronomical.
So that gets back to the next thing, which is setting goals, right?
Goals!
Short-term and long-term goals are a major factor in financial success.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So if you set goals weekly, monthly, and yearly, you're more likely to achieve them because if you never define them, you never know where you're going, so you're never going to get there.
And you can't just throw a goal on a piece of paper and think it's going to work. You really have to think it through.
It needs to be specific.
Okay.
With an amount and a time frame and your actions.
Example that you want to save, I don't know, 10, 15% of your income.
Yes.
Is your goal.
Yes.
How are you going to do it? That's the question.
Right.
You and your wife or your husband or whoever, you need to talk that out. How are we going to get from currently we're at 2%, how do we get to 15%?
And it could be just as simple as going into the HR department and saying, I want to max out my 401k. Because typically 15% is the max.
And also look at how many deductible, what's the word I'm looking for?
Dependents.
Dependents. How many dependents?
Yes.
I was thinking, because we just did one on taxes not too long ago, mm-hmm. and that money that you're paying to Uncle Sam really doesn't do you mm-hmm. any good when it's sitting in the tax office
for a year. And that may be where $50, $60 every paycheck will go into that saving.
Yep.
I think almost everybody could get $50 just by changing their dependents and still not have to pay taxes.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. come April.
So what you guys are talking about, just putting a little bit away and setting goals, is really the magic of compound interest.
Let me put my sorcerer's hat on.
Learning and understanding and acting on the magic of compound interest.
You know, once you understand compound interest, all your excuses of why you can't set money aside, they just go right out the window. That it becomes so much hogwash. You know, when you invest money, your money earns a return. And the next year, your original investment, plus the earnings that you have, the interest or dividends you earned, are given a chance for an additional return. You know, you're going to earn more money. And that happens year after year after year after year if you just put it in there and leave it. Don't touch it. That's how $5,000 grows to $100,000 in 45 years with no extra money.
So compound interest works for you if you're a saver, but if you're a debtor, it works against you, correct?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. What about loans? You know, I know our grandson was looking at different loans for his trade school, and luckily he's not going to need one, but college loans can be a real drain on the finances.
Well, I think the average college graduate today has about $40,000 of debt in school loans.
How much do you think that kids that are going into college just out of high school understand about school loans?
Zip.
Well, I think they're aware because of it's in the news a lot.
Yeah.
I think they're aware, but I don't think they understand.
Deeply the consequences.
Yes.
Yeah, I think they know, okay I have to pay it back, but they don't understand what that means
to
their life.
In total. Yeah.
Yeah. And the interest and the length of time, you know? So we highly encourage, if you're getting a loan for college, take out the least amount that you need and accomplish your degree on time and start paying it back as soon as you can. And make sure you're going to get a degree in something that's going to earn you a living.
You know, I was just talking to a friend of ours, and he was telling me that their HR department sent out a email survey with all the employees on listing. They gave them five choices, and they asked them to prioritize the some benefits that they want to introduce. And one of those is student payback.
Really?
Student loan payback, you know.
Now, that's about the third time I've heard that lately.
That's a growing trend. Yeah. I think there's going to be a lot of businesses that are going to start offering some type of a loan payback for their employees.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you know, the people are not going to stay in that low-paying job or that medium-paying job because, you know, they've got $40,000, $50,000, $100,000 worth of debt. It's just not going to happen.
What about, let's talk about buying a house. You know, that seems to be a real benchmark in people's lives when they're old enough to buy a house and they have enough money saved to buy a house. But it's really important to have 20% as your down payment before you purchase a house, correct?
Yes, that is a huge number. And, you know, I know that for a young person who's just buying their first house, 20% is a huge number for them to save. But it's such an important number because they will save 1% on the interest. They have to pay mortgage protection insurance if they have less than 20% down. And so that 1% is of the total value of the loan. It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money over a 30-year mortgage. And the last thing we want to encourage your people that are going out of high school and into an adult lifestyle is to pay attention to their credit scores. Because if you have good financial habits, your credit score is going to take care of itself. But if you have bad financial habits and a bad credit score, you're going to be in lots of trouble.
Well, and you know, you need to monitor it. Get a free credit report from each of your reporting agencies once a year. And the best thing to do is to take a report from one of the companies, 4 months later, take a report from another, and then 4 months later, take a report from the third one. So you have a continual rolling review of your credit report. Don't try to manipulate your score by doing silly things just to increase the credit score. Be solid. Be solid with your money.
So the above ideas are more about behavior and attitude than about the amount of money you make. So we pray that you will help your graduates become wise about how they give, save, and spend.
What a great financial life lesson we just heard, teaching your children the value of money, how to spend wisely, how to save, how to give, how to invest. Now, if you would like to share this show with a friend or family member, you can download a copy simply by going to compasscatholic.org and on the homepage, click on podcast. We've also supplied some notes from today's show. They are available inside Evelyn's blog that she wrote. The blog is called What Your Graduate Needs to Know About Money, also available at compasscatholic.org. All right, John and Evelyn, what do you say we get to a couple of emails that we received this week? Here's number one. John and Evelyn, I'm considering offering someone a cash incentive to make some changes in their life. Is this a good idea? Is this biblical? This is interesting.
You know, I'm not sure about that, because it seems like you're almost bribing somebody to make a change that you want them to make. I think it might be okay if it's a change that they want to make and you want to support them in that. But simply paying money to somebody so that they'll do something you want them to do doesn't feel right to me.
Yes and no. For example, you're going to match the additional payments that a child makes on the mortgage payment, for example, on their mortgage payment. If they make an extra $100 or $200 or $500 payment every month and you match that, you're encouraging them to help get the mortgage paid off sooner, because you know that not having a mortgage is such a blessing in a couple's life. And so if you do it from that standpoint, I don't really consider it as a bribe.
No, but in that case, they have some skin in the game because they're making extra payments that you're helping them with.
Right.
If they're not willing to make extra payments, I don't see any reason for mom and dad to pop in and try to take care of the mortgage.
Evelyn, that's a good point.
All right, here's question number two. Except for our mortgage, my husband and I are debt-free. He will be 59 and a half in December. We're considering cashing in an IRA to pay off the mortgage. We will still have his retirement to live on. Is this a responsible idea?
Well, the good news is that at 59 and a half, you don't get hit with that 10% penalty for going into your IRA and doing what they call an early withdrawal. So the things that you've got to consider is, how much money are you actually going to have as a retirement income? And is it sufficient to meet all of the expenses that you've identified with your budget? Because I know you've got a budget. At least you better have one. If your retirement is sufficient, then it's okay to use an IRA for your mortgage payment. Or you could just kind of save it and maybe pay it off over the next 5 years. And don't take that whole lump sum of the IRA, but take it partially each of the next 5 years and have it paid off by the time you fully retire.
Well, isn't there a tax hit to the IRA, depending on how much you're withdrawing and how much your tax percentage is?
Well, you have to pay taxes on it. But if you're over 59 and a half, there's no penalties.
Okay, but you still might want to consider what your total income is for that year and how much that IRA, if you're withdrawing a huge amount, how much that will impact your taxes.
Yes, because it's added to your normal income.
And if you are struggling with a financial matter, you just maybe have a financial question to pose to John and Evelyn, email the questions to ask@compasscatholic.org. For John and Evelyn Meade, I want to thank you so much for listening. Remember, we have a brand new podcast available for you bright and early each and every Wednesday. Simply go to compasscatholic.org. On the homepage, scroll down, click on podcast. Not only will you find the most current, but you'll also find an archive of all the podcasts that we've done. Thank you so much for listening. This is Manage Your Money God's Way, and we are from Compass Catholic Ministries.
Hello, this is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tour's Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com, for faith, fellowship, and love.